Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth.
Yes, it is. The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. Of course, we are streaming live here on the web at theadvertisingshow.com as well. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production, and we're back. We've got a special guest and an author and a great ad guy, too. Luke Sullivan, author of Hey Whipple, Squeeze This, and a great-looking book. We'll talk to Luke out of Austin, which is a hotbed for one of the greatest agencies in the country, GSD&M. So we'll be talking to Luke in this half hour. We've got the Wacky World of Marketing. We've got Mary Lou Quinlan coming up. And let's see, Wacky World of Marketing at the bottom. We've got good or bad this hour?
I think good.
Good, okay. Yeah. Good. Very good. Well, it is the weekend, and we are pleased to be spending some time with you. If you are listening on the web, you know that the AdvertisingShow.com website is also a great source of information and the best way to channel questions to Brad and Ray at theadvertisingshow.com.
We won't take them, but go ahead and channel them to us.
Yes, we can do that.
And you know what else is great about the
You've got your spam filter on, too, by the way.
True.
Right.
And if you miss the show, like if you're tuning out right now and you want to hear it completely.
Hey, don't do that.
Or if
Stop.
You're getting out of your car to go pick up your dry cleaning or whatever you might be doing and you want to hear a complete show because you were in and out and you thought Luke was such a great interview or you liked the Wacky World of Marketing, or if you just like what Ray has to say today, go to the Advertising
Possibly
Show.
Wanted to sell the interview with Luke.
Correct.
Don't do that, though.
Go to theadvertisingshow.com and click onto the archive page, and you will be hearing this and many other shows, depending on what you might be interested in.
That's a fact.
We are going to be updating the Hero product placement, which is something that we did a few weeks ago. We had the principles of Hero product placement on the show.
Right. As we don't know what product placement is, that means you put products into events, television shows, movies, and things like that.
And if you
for
don't
exposure,
correct. And we were talking to them on the air, and we mentioned that the Advertising Show is going to do a little bit of a an experiment with them, and that is we're going to be a placement for Hero product placement, and we will see what goes, and I'm going to give you an update, not this hour, but next hour.
Okay.
That's a tease.
Okay.
And speaking of teases, Ray.
Nah, nah, nah.
I don't like that outfit you're wearing.
You don't
Put
like
your
what?
Shirt back on. Hey, before we get to Mary Lou.
Yes.
I brought you something.
Okay.
You know, I was just on a trip last week to St. Helena.
Looks like a sausage.
California. I was going to say, this is not what you think it is.
Looks like a sausage or a big jalapeno.
Well, or, you
or
know,
pepper.
It could be a lot of different things, but you're exactly right.
You wrapped that in tinfoil. How'd you get that on the airplane?
That's a whole other story. Hey, here's Brad. Happy to see me. Anyway, no, and in particular, you always like spicy food, right?
Oh, that's an understatement.
I was at the Vela Cheese Factory, which is a well-known cheese factory in Sonoma, very historical place. Met Mr. Vela, by the way. And they had a little sample for sausage there. So I took a little nibble, and I said, what was that? They said, that was
habanero sausage.
Habanero-coated sausage. I said, thanks for telling me. Do you have any water?
It's too late.
So anyway, I brought you
Wonderful.
One. I brought you one.
Oh, thank you.
And use it at your own risk.
Yeah, no kidding. I look forward to that. Can't wait to open it.
Yeah.
And I still want to know how you got it on the airplane.
Well,
wrapped in
it wasn't in foil then.
Okay.
No.
You give it to the people who examine the luggage. Say, take a bite. Go ahead. Come on. I dare you.
Right.
Time for Mary Lou Quinlan on the Advertising Show.
And now, stay tuned for What Women Want. Insights from listening to your most powerful customer. Here's Mary Lou Quinlan.
If you listen to women in focus groups, I'll bet you've heard women talk about inner beauty. You know what that is, right? It's what's inside that counts. I'm beautiful just the way I am now. Yeah, women love inner beauty. In fact, they love it even more as years go by. But the truth about women is that they also love outer beauty. It might be politically correct to sneer at the beautiful Victoria's Secret models, but they sell a lot of underwear to women. There's a reason women look at the girls in music videos or on Maxim covers. They're doing a comparison check that goes something like this. Yeah, she's pretty, but my hair is nicer. And if I worked out with a trainer all day like she does, I could be like that. It's a way of creating common ground, or at least staying in the game. Don't think that women check out other women? Ever done a drive-by makeover? Women do it all the time. Pick any public location where there are lots of women, a mall, for example. Grab a seat and look at the other women passing by, thinking thoughts like, lose the perm. What is she thinking wearing those pants? It's a way of helping other women, or at least saying, I'm not that bad. Now that you know the truth about inner outer beauty, what's an advertiser to do about it? There's nothing wrong with pretty models, just cold ones, or ones that look like they can't add. Women like to look at beautiful women as long as there's room for her to imagine herself in the picture, too.
This has been What Women Want from The Advertising Show with your host, Mary Lou Quinlan, CEO of Just Ask a Woman. To learn more about what women want, visit justaskawoman.com.
This is Mary Lou Quinlan reminding you, if you want to know what women want, stop selling and start listening.
Yeah, I could tell that appealed to your feminine side. You were enjoying that, weren't you?
Well, and I didn't like the fact that you said when I asked you this morning before we did the got on the air.
Yeah.
That these pants make my butt look big, Ray. And you answered me, and I was very upset about
that. Really?
Honesty is not a good thing always.
No. Maybe Luke has some insight in that. Luke Sullivan will be joining us here momentarily. Hey, Whipples, squeeze this.
Yeah, great title, isn't it?
Love it.
Great title. And if you're familiar with GSD&M, he's the creative guy there.
Excellent. Here's something unusual. KFC is launching a campaign to change the high-fat image. You know, if you're going to eat Kentucky Fried Chicken, how can you possibly eat healthy?
Yeah.
I mean, come on now. With sales declining and competition expanding, KFC is going on the offensive with a defensive-minded strategy aimed at educating the public that fried chicken can actually be a part of a healthy diet, as long as you don't eat 12 pieces and put heavy on the gravy or something, I guess. Isn't that weird?
Well, it is weird. It's like taking the core business model of what got you there and deciding to go another direction. Yeah. There's something to be said for expanding your menu if you want to cater to that market. But, I mean, what the hell?
See, I don't even agree with that. I think McDonald's, you know, doing the healthy salads and all that kind of garbage.
Lost it a little bit, didn't
it? I really don't think that that's the right tack that they should take for something like that. It's like, be who you are.
You're right.
And do the good job at it.
Right, and do I have time to read this? It's just a short one.
Yeah,
we've
got about a minute and a half.
Okay, well, set your TVs and VCRs. CBS will be airing the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show Wednesday, November 9th at 10 p.m. Eastern, 1 hour later than when the special aired the previous 2 years. I think that may have been a little, you know, because of the uprising.
Family thing?
Well, maybe. Featured models include Tyra Banks, Heidi Klum, and Gisele Bündchen, and guests include, and they always try to, you know, spread it out a little bit, guest includes Sting. And Mary J. Blige.
Bilgey.
Is it Bilgey?
Bilgey.
Somebody advised me that it was Blige. It's Bilgey?
It's Bilgey.
I'm going with you.
Okay. Alex.
The show, yes, I'll take guest for 50, Alex.
So you'll be watching the show, won't you?
You've got the $3 set. What are you talking about?
Get the VCR, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Just a minute. We've got Luke Sullivan on the phone from Austin, and we'll be talking with Luke this hour. So if you went anywhere, that would be, like, really stupid. Well, you know, you're not stupid, are you? On The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
Bob's dull life is just like this little hamster on a wheel. Bob works in a big office building. Bob is bored. Sometimes Bob gets to stop for lunch. And then it's 1 o'clock. And Bob goes back to work. Sometimes Bob just stops working and stares off into space. But then Bob's boss walks by. Bob could have gone to Dunwoody Institute and trained for an interesting career in fields like printing and graphics, land surveying, or automotive service, but he didn't. Ooh, looks like Bob's going for a promotion. Call Dunwoody at 374-5800.
On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, that is the pen and the creative of a gentleman who is our guest today. His name is Luke Sullivan. We'll get into the book here in just a moment. Hey, Whipple Squeeze, this is the name of that. But let me tell you a little bit about Luke Sullivan. After 10 years at the well-regarded Minneapolis agency Fallon McElliott, Luke became the chief creative officer of Atlanta's biggest agency, West Wayne. Now, after 4 years of helping them attain some creative accolades of their own, he is group creative head at GSD&M in Austin. And his 24 years of experience include working for such clients as Miller Time, Miller Lite Beer, United Airlines, Lee Jeans, Publix Supermarkets. What a great supermarket. I wish we had them here in Houston. SunTrust and Ralston Purina, as well as Porsche, BMW, and Maserati Automobiles. He's the author of a book. It's called On Advertising. It's called Hey Whipple, Squeeze This. Now in its second edition, available in 5 languages and 3 colors. And used across the country in colleges. So, Luke, welcome to the Advertising Show. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Well, our pleasure. And by the way, before we get into questions here, your office sent our associate producer, Stephanie Sartelli, a couple articles that were written about your book. I guess these are reviews. And one from Imagery Magazine out of Minneapolis, a gentleman by the name of Kevin Fenton. I don't know if you can go online and catch this, but after having read his two-three page review of the book, I got to tell you, it's a great reason why attorneys should never get into advertising, don't you think?
I'm trying to remember that article. That was written back in '98 when the book came out.
Is that right?
I don't think I would have sent it to you if it was panning the book. What did it say?
Well, after about 8 paragraphs, he got around to discussing the book, which I thought that's very attorney-ish. But I don't know. It was all about his writing. You could tell that the guy was in love with his writing as opposed to really giving any kind of a review of the book. But let's talk about the.
You can file that article now. There you go.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. So let's talk about your book. The title, Hey Whipple, Squeeze This. How'd you come up with that title, Luke?
It was actually, I dug it out of my files years ago. Somebody at the One Show, which is one of the best advertising award shows in the nation, asked us to do a poster, a call for entries, as they call them. And I wrote that. It was rejected as a poster for them. Because it was, you know, 4 big words. Hey, Whipple, squeeze this, and then the visual is, of course, going to be the One Show pencil, which is, of course, the gold medal they hand out for the world's best advertising. I thought it was nice for them, but for one reason or another, it didn't happen. But it stayed in my files, as often things do in creative files, and they get trotted out whenever another use comes up.
Yeah, and I think that's a great, not only a great title, which was my motivation in requesting the book through the publisher Wiley, you know, I think there's something to be said, Luke, for what you just said in terms of keeping great ideas on file if they are rejected by a client or just don't make it to the presentation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, the fact of the matter is what the first chapter is all about is explains the title, because the fact of the matter is, now I'm 49. Okay, I grew up in the 60s when Whipple was running, mm-hmm. and Whipple was all over the TV. And the fact of the matter is that the grocer was an old grocer named Mr. Whipple who would always catch ladies in the aisles squeezing the rolls of Charmin toilet tissue because it was so soft. Ladies, please don't squeeze the Charmin was the refrain, and it ran for 25 years, and there's, I think, 504 different Mr. Whipple commercials. And the fact of the matter is, whether you or I or anybody else likes or doesn't like that creative solution, it worked. It knocked Scott's tissues out of the number one spot, and mm-hmm. they sold literally billions of rolls of toilet paper with that campaign. Now, the point of the matter is, that stuff worked.
Now, if you're listening and you're not an agency person, but say on the client side, an advertiser, what do you take away from what you just said?
What I take away is this. You can, with a big enough hammer and a big enough budget, pound your sales message into a customer's head that way by just sheer force of repetition and irritation alone. You can make money that way. But with a smaller hammer and a smaller budget, perhaps a more, I don't know, intellectual or creative or clever or interesting way, achieve greater results with something else besides irritating or yelling your way into your customer's consciousness.
You know, and it's interesting that you say that because a great campaign that's out right now has been out for a few years, I guess, and awarded, rightly so, by the industry as the Crispin Porter campaign for many. And there's a good example of an advertiser that had a minuscule budget, but yet was able to hire the right agency and go along with some risky advertising, wouldn't you say, Lou?
Absolutely. And what Crispin is, I think, one of the best agencies in the world right now. And what's marvelous about what they did, imagine now if the Whipple's agency got a hold of them, they would have probably opened on the car, and then they'd have a guy talking about the horsepower and the floor mats, and it comes with a CD player and all the other stuff that I'm sure makes a Mini a nice car. The fact of the matter is they didn't do that. They got into the customer's consciousness without even the benefit of typical television buys like other cars. They were just able to put this interesting product in front of the right people in interesting, non-invasive, non-intrusive sort of ways that they engaged people and had customers meeting them more than halfway, coming out of the water because, hey, this looks interesting. Tell me more about it.
And, you know, when you think about the target for that market, guerrilla tactics as they used, and they also used some interesting positioning or sizing of ads in various magazines, which is, I think, a way underutilized medium for reaching young people, which they have done very effectively. Since your book is a second edition, Luke, what content from its original printing in 99 didn't make it?
Let me think. Number one, when you do a second edition, apparently publishers, they told me anyway, that they like to have at least 30% new material. So, and over the years, since it was first published in 1998, I kept thinking of new things and learning new things from my colleagues that, hey, that's interesting. Students should know that. And I kept that file going. And so when Wiley came back to me and said, hey, it's time for another edition, I was more than pleased to do it. And so I had kept the whole thing on a disc, and I just went in there, and I added, it's mostly adding stuff that I hadn't had before.
Mm-hmm. So your book got bigger?
About 45 pages bigger.
And I think Ray mentioned that it was...
weighs more now, too, doesn't it, Lucas?
He's going to convert this to a pound price as opposed to an issue.
Well, I think so.
Five languages that this book has been translated into. And, of course, we know English is one because we've read this.
So how do we say...
I don't know how to explain this, but the other two big languages are what we used to call communist countries with a lack of capitalism, but China. There's two versions of Chinese Mandarin, an original Chinese, and there's also Russian. There's, I'm forgetting the other two.
Spanish and French.
I would love to have a Hispanic version, but they haven't asked for that yet. If you're in Russia and you need to, Polish is one, and I have a copy of that. I can't read it, but it's fun to hold it. Go figure, but those are the markets that Wiley was able to...
So I wonder how you say, hey, Whipple, squeeze this in Russian.
You say L. Whipple.
L. Whipple?
I don't know.
I wish I had a copy in front of me. I can't even pronounce the Polish headline. Of course, I can't even read the Chinese one.
It doesn't matter. As long as you cash the checks and they work, they're fine, okay?
We
got Luke Sullivan on the... Luke, we've got to take a break here. Luke Sullivan on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Did you have to say something there?
I was just wondering if they're paying him in yen or American dollars.
Yen and ying and yang.
Yeah.
There we go. We'll be back in just a minute. We've got the wacky world of marketing with our executive producer, Bruce Abbott, coming up. Next, we've got a little bit later on this hour, some good advertising. Got Andy Borowitz on the way next hour, too. Just a whole bunch of stuff. So stay with the Advertising Show at theadvertisingshow.com. We'll be right back.
And now it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing. Wacky World of Marketing. Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to Cawker City, Kansas, where AP reports it's a huge ball of string that binds a town together. Now, Cawker City, Kansas is celebrating the 50th anniversary of the world's largest ball of twine. Local artist Cher Olson is reinterpreting the Grand Masters while doing her string thing. She has the Mona Lisa holding a ball of twine. But her version of Michelangelo's David was removed from a storefront window after someone complained about the so-called naked boy in the window. Apparently, the ball of string wasn't strategically placed. Cawker City's monster twine ball, by the way, is now more than 41 feet around. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Let's try an experiment. I'm going to play the same message twice, once with one musical background and a second time with another.
I'll tell you this. They're messing with the wrong people. Because we're marching into that capital and taking no prisoners.
And now, the other.
I'll tell you this. They're messing with the wrong people. Because we're marching into that capital and taking no prisoners.
This slight manipulation, known as spin doctoring, is a device used by image consultants to help political candidates appear as they wish to appear. That is why, in the Star Tribune's election coverage... Excuse me? Thank you. That is why we present only the plain, unadorned facts on the issues, on the candidates, and on the solutions they propose. In the election coverage of the Star Tribune.
It's The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and our special guest Luke Sullivan, a Star Tribune ad of Luke's. Let's talk about that for just a minute.
Well, that was for the coverage of the election coverage in 19. What was the last election? 98, I guess.
Yeah.
And that was part of a campaign of three. What I suppose I could talk about mostly about that is that humor is a mini splintered thing. And you could have probably done a very broad, you know, yuck fest sort of commercials, or I chose to do it with that tone because I don't want the product or the client to be a whack fest. We're talking about a newspaper, we're talking about an election, and a certain amount of gravitas is called for.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, on the other hand, you don't want to just bore people to death. And so I took some care with the client working to get to a nice balance of this is interesting. This is I'm getting a smile out of it, and yet also I'm not having a yuck fest at the cost of my client's, you know, brand equity.
Well, let's talk about that because we've all heard radio spots that certainly try too hard to be funny, and along the way the advertiser's message is either lost or certainly at the very least not memorable. What advice, Luke, would you give an advertiser or an agency creative considering a radio concept that has a humorous slant to it? How do you evaluate when you're going too far?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think this radio, TV, anything where you're trying to sell a client, sell a product which may or may not be inherently interesting to a disinterested audience. I liken it to a friend once told me this metaphor of when you're trying to give a pill to a dog. You know, dogs don't like pills. Try to stuff a dog. So what do? You wrap it in a piece of bologna, and then the dog will eat it. He likes the smell of it. It's interesting to him, and yet he's also getting the medicine he needs. I liken that metaphor to an advertiser's problem is that, yes, I've got to get my customer this pill that says our product is on sale this weekend. If I just came up and tried to tell that to a customer, that like the dog walking away from the dish, the pill will be there in the bottom. I need to wrap it in something interesting. I needed to make it interesting to them so that they'll both do it. Yet, oftentimes I'll see a commercial where they'll just do all bologna first. It's just all bologna, 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 bologna. And then they think that if I just put the pill at the end of this commercial, they'll swallow it. But as soon as the bologna is done, it's no longer interesting anymore, and the dog walks away from the dish, and there's the pill at the bottom of the dish.
Mm.
You need to weave the sales message into the interesting part of the commercial in order to engage a customer to listen to your sales
message. So the pill has to take on the image of the, or the taste and feel and touch of the good-tasting stuff, basically.
Yeah.
That's the payoff for the consumer. You know, I was talking to Ray about that very concept before the show today, Luke, and described what you just described about how the dog and the pill and you hide it in the bologna. And he said, we play hide the bologna all the time here at the studios. But
well,
I think he misunderstood what
cut
I was trying
out.
To describe. But
did you explain it to him?
I did eventually, yeah. Since we're on the radio, let's continue with a little bit about...
Brad still thinks he's in college, okay?
and Ray is my playmate.
Yeah.
Since we're on the radio, let's talk about effective radio advertising. You mentioned you dedicate an entire chapter of your book, Hey Whipple, Squeeze This, to radio, and I love the title of the chapter, Radio is Hell, but it's a Dry Heat, and certainly that's a very descriptive chapter for radio. Why do you recommend not doing jingles for radio? I'm curious about that.
I think that's only a stylistic bias of mine. I cannot prove to you that they're bad, they're wrong, they're ineffective. I can't. it's a stylistic bias that every writer has one or two or three or four.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my. It's just simply they simply bug me. I think there's sort of a holdover from the Eisenhower 50s when you know it's a boring and corny a holdover from the Eisenhower's 50s that I have no particular interest in. Now, later on in the show, I actually did a jingle once, and I think I sent you guys one of those commercials. It actually has a jingle, but I had fun writing it. It was sort of a parody of the genre.
Well, the current the
Miller one you're talking about, right?
No, I think it's actually for a small little client called Dunwoody Technical Institute.
Okay, yeah, we probably have that,
well,
right?
Stay tuned.
You know, you can talk about jingles, too. The concept that we talked about here in Houston a long time ago is we've got television stations that are selling commercial ads, schedules, in exchange for buying a jingle that has no memorable characteristics, and it pretty much stinks for these poor advertisers to spend a bunch of bucks on the television. I think that is so wrong, too.
So if
you know, the fact of the matter is, you guys, like they say, well, Whipple stunk, in my opinion. It stunk, and yet it was very effective, and the fact of the matter is, I can still whistle you jingles from my youth, you know, Ask Any Mermaid, you happen to see who's the best chicken, you know, whatever.
Right.
You remember it. Yes, but the question is, can you look your, when you go home at the end of the day, and you look your child, my child's Reed, and I look in his eyes, or my boy Preston, and I say, then they ask me, what did you do today, Dad? I have to be able to look at them with a straight face and tell them proudly what I did. And I don't think I can do it without breaking a smile saying, Daddy wrote a jingle today.
Let's take a break here, Luke. On the advertising show, it's Ray Shillins along with Brad Forsyth and our special guest out of GSD&M in Austin, Luke Sullivan, author of the book, Hey Whipple, Squeeze This, back in just a minute with more.
Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth are taking your questions at theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
Thank you for dialing Miller Time. If you're drinking your Miller Lite from a can, press 1. From a bottle, press 2. If you're enjoying your Miller Lite with Mexican food, press 1. With burgers, press 2. If you're drinking your Miller Lite with friends, press 1. With friends you kind of know but not really well, press 2. Please stand by while your commercial is being prepared. Your call is important to us. Please stand by. Here is your customized Miller Lite commercial.
Life is great when you're having a Miller Lite. Pour cold out of the
can.
Great all by itself, but even when the
burgers
all around you sharing love and laughter upon your
some friends whose names you forget.
This moment is pure Miller time.
Thank you for dialing Miller Lite.
Miller Time. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A lot of free spots today, huh, Brad?
Yeah.
The advertising
and
show.
That's one of those jingles that Luke hates.
Yeah. What about that jingle? That was a great jingle.
That's exactly right. That is, you're right. That's a parody of a jingle, which I think, anything can be turned to your own purposes. And I hope listeners think that it was an interesting way to do a jingle because it was kind of made fun of the genre. That spot won the Mercury Awards, the Radio Awards.
Yeah, and if you're just joining us, Luke Sullivan with GSD&M and author of Hey Whipple, Squeeze This. What year was that?
It was 1998, and I remember it didn't win the big $100,000 prize. I think it won it. The producer, Kristen Tacklow, called me from New York because we knew we were kind of up for something, and she called me up extremely inebriated and said, we won the $20,000 prize. And I said, Kristen, guess what? I'll split it with you. So. And I think she probably already had a $10,000 worth of liquor that night, so that actually helped erase her bar tab.
You know, a few months ago, we had Andrew Jaffe, former director of the Clio Awards, and he had several radio spots that were recent winners. The Bud Light American Hero radio campaign, which you do now see on television being translated to a TV version of that radio campaign, is a ripoff of your idea there, Luke. It takes
at least.
Sorry?
I don't see that.
Well, they take a little bit of a fun jingle approach and go back and forth between an announcer and a...
Oh, yeah, but I don't see that. Anything as a rip-off. That is a great campaign, long-running, and I hope they stick with it for a long time. I don't think the public... I think the clients tire of advertising long before the public does, and that's a campaign I just hope they stick with.
Well, you know, Ray and I talked about that when we had the Bud Light campaign on, among with other Clio winners, and we were appalled of the fact that many of the spots that were winners were spots thoughts that we had not heard before, and certainly we would be a target. So it's not like they were pandering to a market that we would not normally be a media consumer of. But you're right. I think, unfortunately, if you are an advertiser, listen to what Luke just said about listening to your advertising or viewing your advertising too closely. Consumers don't listen or look at your advertising nearly as closely as you do the client. And about the time you grow tired of it, most consumers are just catching on at best at what you're trying to communicate.
It's also often a case where a new marketing manager comes in and bless their hearts, they want to make their own imprint, but sometimes that it's the cost of shifting the equity of the brand left or right or up or down. Whereas if something ain't broke it, maybe you shouldn't fix it.
I agree. You can freshen it up, keep it lively, but changing or going another direction is a huge waste of equity building in a brand for a client. You mentioned in your book that if a 60-second radio spot is a house, a 30 is a tent. Ray and I decided that a 10 or 15 must be what, long underwear?
Or a shoebox.
Blanky.
Something, yeah. So, 30 is a different animal.
So, you know, I hear 10s and 15s out there that seem, if they have a single objective, can be effective, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. It's a different animal. It has to be done. I think typically a radio spot is often a story. And a story, at least the dictates of most writers, has a beginning, a middle, and end, a first act, second, and a third, and it flows. And you can barely get away with that in a 60. In a 30, I don't think you have time for story. I think you have it's a swatch, mm-hmm. a quick hit. And it's more of a pie in the face than an actual comic story if it were doing humor.
It's more difficult to work within a 30, don't you think?
I tend to think so. Yeah, it just takes you just have to put down the pen and pick up a different kind of pen, and you have to put on a different sort of writing hat, in my opinion, anyway. A good 30.
Yeah, I agree. A couple quick questions. We have just about a minute left here, Luke. Do you think radio is the most misunderstood advertising medium of all?
Yeah, it certainly is up there for number one. It is extremely hard to be really good at radio, and typically over my years, I meet people who are particularly good at it. And they're not often very great print or TV writers, but when you have that ear, that golden ear, you are very important to an advertiser or to an agency, because few people can pull it off, dialogue and the imagination it takes to work in that big blank space in the sky that's radio.
Theater of the mind. And of course, if you listen to radio, you can tell the good ones from the bad. They really jump out at you.
Yeah, they sure are, as a matter of fact. We're not done with Luke. We're going to take a break, let him go out and do edging on his lawn, I guess. That's what he wanted to do, something like that.
And drink a beer.
Just a few minutes. We'll get back with Luke in the next hour of the Advertising Show. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth here.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
After graduation, as you sit in your parents' basement waiting for the phone to ring with job offers that will never come, you begin to hear them. The crickets. That lonely sound. The theme song of the disenfranchised. Sometimes you think you hear the phone ringing with a job offer, but it's just them. The crickets. Soon you start to hear what they're really saying. Now's probably not a good time to hear about the graduates of Dunwoody Institute. How there's an average of 4 job opportunities waiting for every Dunwoody graduate. No. You're going to hold out for a call that will never come.
Hello?
Call Dunwoody Institute and get training in one of 16 interesting careers. 374-5800. 374-5800.
That replaces one of our classic spots here, and the reason is that is a spot created by Luke Sullivan, our guest this hour on the Advertising Show. We will have Luke back next hour, so if you'd like to hear more from Luke, and we hope you do, stick around.
Right.
All right. Very good. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, remember, we are streaming live on the web at theadvertisingshow.com. And if you cannot get us on a radio near you, that's a great way to find out what we do here on The Advertising Show. Every week we look at the good and the bad of advertising, and we don't mean to knock anybody's advertising campaigns, but all we do is try to help you be a better advertiser.
And we'll knock them every once in a while, won't we?
Well, it's kind of fun, actually, every once in a while.
It's easy to pick the good stuff out.
And there's a lot of bad stuff out there, too.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not yours, really. Yuck, yuck, yuck. This week it's good.
And now it's time for the Advertising Show's Advertising Showcase, an outstanding example of on-target advertising for the good stuff. Here's Ray and Brad.
Here's the good stuff this week.
Yeah.
What you got?
Well, you weren't able to get that audio track, were you?
Audio track?
On this that I sent you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, we'll talk about it after the show then. The Apple Rock radio TV spot, Apple Rock. It's for iPod. TBW, Shiat Day out of Los Angeles created this campaign. Now, a few weeks ago, we featured Apple's iPod spot entitled Hip Hop, which, of course, was Apple's break spot for iPod. And now what we're seeing is a new spot entitled Rock. And what I like about it is that it does everything the break spot does while it targets a new consumer group, those who enjoy rock and roll, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a wonderfully engaging spot that, for those not familiar with, it shows individual dancers in silhouette against brightly colored backgrounds. And these dancers are, of course, young hipsters, all have one thing in common, and that is that they love music. But they also mm-hmm. have this white iPod in their hand, and they have the earpieces in their ear, so you can see it showing up very well up against the silhouette. But not until the final 10 seconds, Ray, do you learn that the spot is for iPod. And as the words iPod graphically appear on the screen, the action returns to a little bit more dancing of these silhouettes. And then as you're viewing the final 5 seconds, the words Mac or PC appear, and then the spot closes with the Apple logo. Other than the rock music and certainly the dancing, it follows the same creative line as the first hip-hop spot for iPod. Mm-hmm. The band, just a piece of trivia, is Jet, which is out of Melbourne, Australia. The title cut that they used for this is Are You Gonna Be My Girl? And no, Ray, I don't mean that figuratively.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I mean that we'll talk about that after the show.
Right.
So anyway, they were the break. They were also the opening act for the Rolling Stones in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So in case you're in case you were down there and you don't remember it, that's who they were. The iPod spot execution clearly resonates with its target, no doubt, which are, again, music lovers. I think the spot, Ray, also conveys that if you're an iPod user, you're hip and you're cool.
Okay.
And you're technically out there. So anyway, great execution
spot
from TBWA Shiat Day out of Los Angeles. And if you want to see the spot, you can see it at adcritic.com, which is a great website to visit to see many spots.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is a good spot. Animation a little bit more expensive than your traditional stuff, but you can still use the same concept for your creative.
Well, and I think at the end of your 13-week cycle, mm-hmm. you don't have to go pay the animator.
Mm.
You own the silhouettes
yeah.
as opposed to talent and union and all that good stuff.
Hey, they've got something new going on with digital television. And this is a court ruling. A federal court this past week upheld a federal communications commission order regarding digital TV technology that has the potential to dramatically alter the American media landscape. Isn't that a powerful statement? Okay.
How long have they been saying that?
Three-judge panel at the U.S. Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the FCC mandate that all but the very smallest of TV sets sold in the United States by 2007 must be equipped for receiving digital along with the traditional analog TV signals. And when you think about it, 2007, it'd probably be there anyway.
Right.
You know? So it's and the price of televisions are going to come down with respect to flat screen. Do you have a flat screen?
No.
I don't.
No.
I don't have one.
If I stand back far enough, it kind of looks like a flat screen. But up close, you can tell there's a back end to it. You remember?
At least it's color, and that's good.
True. Right? We're old enough to remember the transition from black and white to color television.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see your favorite TV show shot in black and white, and then all of a sudden, one season, they're in color.
Look at Andy.
Huh.
Look at MB.
Yes.
I didn't know she was a brunette.
I think she was gray,
yeah.
But that's the way it goes. Luke Sullivan is back with us next hour on the Advertising Show out of GSDM and D&M in Austin. And we've got Luke on the phone. He's just kind of waiting. And he'll wait.
I'll do a shout out to him.
Hi. Hey, Luke. Austin.
Yeah.
Right. Got Fusion 5, Patrick Meyer coming up next hour. A bit from Andy Borowitz, The Wacky World of Marketing. There's just a bunch of good reasons to stay with us here on The Advertising Show. Brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit Advertising Age Magazine online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production, and we're here on the SSI Radio Network.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show, being a Big Radio Midgets production, is a great way to spend part of your weekend with us. Last hour, if you weren't with us, we were talking with Luke Sullivan, GSD&M in Austin, also author of the book, Hey Whipple, Squeeze This, and we've got Luke back with us for the second hour of the Advertising Show. We've also got Patrick Meyer from Fusion 5. Andy Borowitz is coming up this hour, and just a bunch of great stuff, too. The Wacky World of Marketing as well, too, on The Advertising Show.
You know, every time you read his title of his book, Hey,
yes.
Whipple, squeeze this,
yeah.
Why do you keep pointing? Is that just a visual thing for me?
Yeah, probably so.
Uh-huh.
Visual cue. So what's cooking on your side of the fence?
Well, you know, this is a new thing that just came out, and I picked this up on Yahoo.com News. And you may not know this, but the creators of the Casino and Gaming Television Network.
Yeah.
I repeat, Casino and Gaming Television Network.
Is it interactive or something, or what?
Are hoping that the national interest in gambling will translate to a huge television audience.
Why?
Yeah, well, this is why, I guess. Well, let's read on. The new network is scheduled to launch in 2004 as a digital cable and satellite channel with shows such as Winning Hand, with poker experts offering tips on games.
Oh, okay.
And Dusk Till Dawn, a tour of night spots in Las Vegas, Monaco, and other gambling destinations. Here's where they came about with this, which I thought was interesting. More than 50 million Americans made more than 300 million visits to casinos last year.
Wow.
So I guess one more niche channel, such as the Golf Channel, has been launched. So what do you think? Is this a sure bet, Ray? Would you gamble with your clients' money?
You know, I would.
I guess, you know, they think about it.
I would.
The Casino and Gaming Television Network, I guess BET was already gone, BET.
It is already
Black
gone.
Entertainment Television, which would have been a great name for them.
Yeah.
But, you think about it. You can't go anywhere. Hell, we were in California up in the hills of the wine country, and every once in a while you would see, I saw a sign that said, Indian Reservation, no casino. They had to go the
really?
Other way with it because most people, I think, associate
but
an Indian reservation
bingo, right,
with a casino. No, I don't know if they had bingo.
Wow.
Yeah.
The first thing that I saw, Indian reservations in Fort Lauderdale, were outside of Fort Lauderdale. They,
mm-hmm.
they sold cigarettes. That was the big thing.
Many
then they
years.
Got into bingo.
Mm-hmm. And now there's a bunch of rich Indians driving around in Porsches and Mercedes.
In Mercedes, exactly.
No, it's a terrible situation, I guess, that the way the Native Americans had been treated over the many decades and centuries, that today they are finally getting their due, but they're having to do it through casinos to take care of the, what would we call you, white man? No. Anyway,
that's actually kind of a cool concept.
So stay tuned for the creators of the Casino and Gaming Television Network.
Not mafia owned or anything like that, right?
Oh, probably not. But
probably not.
Let's see, the president Guido.
Guido.
No.
Time for Patrick Meyer on the Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Just off the press, Pepsi announces a Super Bowl promotion like none other. Pepsi coming together with Macintosh and their iPod. 100 million songs will be downloaded by consumers every time they drink Pepsi. Here's what it's about. It's a mega alliance by mega brands with mega innovation and hopefully mega results. Here's what intrigues me about Pepsi coming together with Apple. Pepsi's looking for a young adult target and how to connect to them through pop culture. They've done it before, and they continue to do it in a big way. In the record world, big issue right now, and young adults are part of it, downloading illegal songs. It used to be Napster, now there are other ways, but they're sharing songs and doing it digitally online. Along comes Apple with their iPod, taking technology and finding a way to surprise and delight consumers, letting them download songs quickly, creating a soundtrack for life. So Pepsi and iPod coming together, going after young adults, is one and one equaling five. Big time, big cultural event, big happening during the Super Bowl. What you end up having is more people drinking more Pepsi, trying iPod for the first time, and becoming users of both brands at a bigger level. What's so intriguing about this for you? Small company, medium company, whatever kind of brand, the concept is mega alliances. Who would be right for your brand? Understand your consumer's passion, look for the brands that are there, and then come together in a natural way and create something so much bigger that allows you to catapult your business and your partners.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer from Fusion 5. And remember, the marketing revolution has begun.
You know, it's kind of a twist on what you were talking about last hour with the concept of the iPod.
Mm-hmm.
And now putting it into an alliance. So that's not a bad way about that.
Yeah, co-branding is always a great way to stretch your dollars. Did you, we're getting close to the holidays here, right?
Yes, it is.
And every holiday season we mention about how advertisers end up running commercials after the timeliness of the holiday.
Yes, we do.
For example, we hear Christmas spots between Christmas and New Year's.
Right.
Just in time for your wife.
Right.
Come by and buy jewelry or whatever.
Right.
Or you'll have a Thanksgiving sale will be happening on, December 12th. But last night I was watching the Ellen DeGeneres show on Oxygen.
Sure.
And they aired a promo that where Ellen is on camera and she reminds everyone to set your clocks back 1 hour. And she also mentions in a funny way that it gives you an extra hour to watch the Ellen show and blah, blah, blah. And, memo to Oxygen. Let's look at your promos and let's look at the content and let's make sure the content is still reasonably placed relative to the time and day part in which you're airing it.
Nothing can make your business or your brand look dumber than making a mistake like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really, it was it's a funny bit that I'm sure was good, the week before, but not the week after.
Somebody forgot to change out the commercial or the promo, I guess.
Happens all the time.
Did you see this thing, Virgin Mobile in Advertising Age, the pictures? With the pictures,
I
too?
I did see it. I didn't have a chance to read it, though.
It's nude spots highlight simplicity as company tries to grab the attention of the youth market. Considering $1.5 billion cell phone marketing blitz expected throughout the end of the year, Virgin Mobile USA's $15 million campaign is modest. Perhaps it's not, they say. Virgin's effort showcases a half dozen actors individually describing the vulnerability one feels in making a gift choice. As they make their presentations, the only clothing is a small box containing a Virgin Mobile cell phone, as you can see from the picture.
Well,
and if this microphone showed pictures, we'd show it to you, too.
That's been why I didn't read it.
It's interesting, though. So they're appealing to they're definitely appealing to the youth, and what a great unusual campaign, something like that.
Abercrombie Fitch approach to their catalog. Similar deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very similar. Sold in stores like Best Buy and Walmart, Circuit City, the prices range from $59 to $139. Virgin Mobile allows consumers to check their phones to see how much time is left, and competitors abound for the 14 to 24-year-old market. Verizon, Boost Mobile, Leap Wireless, Cricket. So it's a big market out there, and they're just pulling out all the stops, or whatever you call it.
Pulling out something.
Something, yes, exactly. Luke Sullivan on the way, and hey, Whipple, squeeze this is the book. We'll talk to Luke in just a moment on The Advertising Show.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth.
When you don't have job training, here's what happens to your resume once you send it to an employer. A secretary throws it into the recycling bin. On Friday, your resume is picked up and taken to the regional recycling center where it's dumped into a slurry degradation machine. Chlorine dioxide and several industrial bleaches are added to your resume to hasten the degradation process. and your resume begins to break down into a pulpy wood slurry. In the giant spinner, impurities like the ink on your resume are siphoned off. This vat of runny wood pulp is then turned into large rolls of clean white paper. These rolls are often sent to printers like this, where they publish things like the new catalog for Dunwoody Institute, which offers actual training in careers like architectural drafting, heating and cooling technology, or automotive service. So call 374-5800 for your copy of Dunwoody's catalog, printed on 100% recycled resumes.
On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, and our special guest joining us again this hour, Luke Sullivan. Luke, that was a great spot for Dunwoody. We've got some more, as a matter of fact, this hour. I think we got one more, if I'm not mistaken. The one we were talking about before with the jingle.
Yeah. Dunwoody is out of where, Luke?
Out of Minneapolis.
Yeah. And they are, what, a trade school kind of thing?
They are. And they're a good product, too. They had, at least when I was working for them, a 98% placement rate right out for seniors.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it was mostly tech stuff. And it's fun in this business. You get to get into, see the business sides of hundreds of different kinds of businesses and learn a lot about them. And I started to think as I was working for Dunwoody, tech school could be a great way, for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's going to be doctors and lawyers. I need my plumbing fixed. The big building going next door needs to have somebody figure out the air ducts. And that's what these people do, and they have a great placement rate. What we did for that, and some of the other commercials for Dunwoody is, you find a bad guy. The bad guy in our case was Ivy League schools and a worthless BA in Romance languages. Learning how to get a job that somebody will hire you for.
And if you're going to take the trade school route, you're a little pissed off at the Ivy League folks anyway, right?
Well, I suppose that there could be some people out there like that.
Let me ask you something. I noticed during that spot, and we'll move on in a second, but there was no call to action, as I recall, which was unusual for a campaign that would be directed towards getting students to sign up to a school, right?
Well, I couldn't hear from where I'm sitting the very end of that spot, but I think all the ones that I sent you all in with I used to know that phone number by heart.
There was a phone number.
Oh, was there a phone number?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was looking over some material just anticipating you coming on, so as most people listen to the radio passively, but after hearing that repeatedly, I'm sure I would be dialing the number right now.
Yes, you would.
But I've already graduated, so I don't really have a use for that. Would you describe your book as more of a how-to book?
Absolutely. It's exactly what it is. There's a lot of pretty darn good books out there in advertising, but sometimes they get too highfalutin, and ads should be good. Commercials should be interesting versus what it's like to actually sit down as a creative person with a blank piece of paper and a pen and actually start to do this stuff. It can be kind of intimidating.
So who would you describe as your target for this book?
Oh, it varies depending on my mood. Some days it's written for students, and mm-hmm. there are a lot of students out there who want to learn the craft and need step by step. There's a chapter in there, though, that I wish clients would read that is about the enemies of advertising and some of the common mistakes that clients make. And so it's written with them in mind. And senior creatives sometimes tell me it's just a good refresher course on the important stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, as usual, anyone and everyone having to do with advertising, this is your book. Hey, Whipple, squeeze this from mm-hmm. Wiley. On the cover of your second edition, did you have any input on the burst with the word second edition, new and improved? And I hope if you did, you were being campy. If not, those bastards at Wiley really screwed up your cover here.
No, I didn't have input. That's the publisher's idea. And I think they were being campy and playing off of the first, of the title, because Whipple is, of course, even when it's good, it's sort of kitsch good. So I think that's what they had in mind.
Well, and just a good lesson to any people out there, this advertising thing is not to be played with.
Mm-hmm.
So leave it to the professionals, please. Reading your book, I wanted to ask you, do you believe the creation of a great ad or a great ad campaign can be boiled down to a formula, a sequence of steps that one can go through during the creative process, Luke?
No, but I think that you can, using a formula, avoid being really bad. Formulas are I think Ed McKay, who was a famous writer from the 70s, once said, "I have no use for rules. They only rule out the brilliant exception." Mm-hmm. All the stuff that we see, not all the stuff, but much of the stuff that we see that really takes our breath away, I bet you has nothing to do with any rules or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, as a junior in this business, you need to start somewhere, and building blocks, discipline, are a great way to start. But after a while, you need to sail on more and sail into the unknown, and that's often where some of the most brilliant things happen. But in terms of, you know, I bet you Picasso learned how to draw a good human figure before he started putting both eyes on the other side of the nose.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that perhaps you can look at an ad once it's created and maybe go through a checklist and ask yourself, does it meet certain criteria?
I suppose I rarely go through that myself. I look at an ad and say, the criteria it needs to meet is, does it sell the client's product?
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, and just equally as important, is it interesting?
Mm-hmm.
So if I had to stand back and do a checklist, that's pretty much what I'd look for.
And in that order, or necessarily?
I'd say both equally important. You cannot have one without the other.
Right. So what are your? There was a great article in Creativity Magazine recently talking about copy testing and research being a little overdone in the creative process. What's your thoughts on copy testing, Luke?
I think it's a bane on the industry. Now, mm-hmm. planning, people often confuse planning with research. Planning is great. That's when you're talking to customers way upstream and you're in the taverns with them and you're in the stores with them and you're trying to get a consumer insight. You're trying to get a consumer to help you as a client understand what it is that resonates with them and makes their heartstrings pling. Now, copy testing is different. Copy testing is CYA stuff. It's what you do if you're an unimaginative or perhaps under fire client and you need to CYA. I think it's a bane on the industry, and it typically is used to water things down and to serve as sort of a legal protection against, well, listen, we tested this stuff, and it should work.
And that was not CMKY, that was CYA,
CYA. Now, those. I remember also in that article, Alex Bogoski at Crispin had a marvelous quotation. He said, I think it's unfair to ask a customer to help them to help create something they've never seen before.
Well, and it's been repeated on the show. I think it was Danny Deutsch who said it's unreasonable to ask a consumer to comment on your ad campaign in terms of the creative direction because, my goodness, they're consumers. They're not, you know, advertising people. But
sure.
Sometimes I think research asks the consumer to do too much in contributing to the process. But, you know, back to the idea of copy testing, which, again, was a part of the article, as I recall, ask yourself, we've all seen the Joe Boxer commercials for Target, and we've seen the Gap commercials, which I think are doing a great job more recently. How would you ever have tested either of those campaigns? I think in both cases, it probably would have been rejected. So, you know, sometimes I guess taking a risk is what it's all about. Do you think there's plenty of risk-taking in today's advertising world or not enough?
Well, our word is an interesting word to use. I certainly wouldn't use it with a client because clients, look at these poor people. They're under fire. They've got to make their numbers. I mean, that's their job. And so I would not like having an agency walk up to me and say, let's be risky.
Uh-huh.
But that's a silly way to put the question. They don't need to hear the R word. They've got, you know, kids to, you know, to put through reform school like the rest of us. And they need to keep their jobs. You need risk is another way, I suppose, of saying doing something different. Yes, you do need to do something different. I mean, every category invents its own brand of boring. If you're in the insurance business, you know, well, we got to show a grandfather with a grandkid because that's the stability.
That's so traditional. Hey, Luke, hold on to that thought for just a moment. We got a break for the Wacky World of Marketing here on the Advertising Show. And, of course, we've got Andy Borowitz coming up later this hour. And we'll have more with Luke in just a minute. We do have to stop for commercials, though, as well, which is, we always say, is a great thing.
Real commercials?
Real commercials, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the ones that we play before were real. They're just old, that's all.
And not paid for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that on The Advertising Show with Ray Schoens and Brad Forsyth.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to Berlin, Germany, where Reuters reported earlier this month a German TV network's regular early morning film of a burning log is playing havoc with night owls and even tricked one woman into calling out the fire department. A spokesman for police said that the woman woke up thinking her TV was on fire, called emergency services, and alerted her neighbors. Fire services rushed in and extinguished the blaze using the television's remote control, the network spokesperson said. Once, they heard an old lady poured water on her TV, but they say most people should really be able to tell the difference. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. You're listening to The Advertising Show on the SSI Radio Network.
You drifted through high school, you didn't learn a trade. So grab a shovel, you got it made. Come on, be a ditch digger, digging it, digging it. Be a ditch digger.
Hey, Doug Melrow here for the Association of Ditch Diggers. Just think, for every mile of country road, there's 2 miles of ditches to be dug, because there are ditches on both sides. Sure, you could go to Dunwoody Institute and learn a skill in one of 16 interesting careers, and maybe one day you might be outstanding in a field like engineering drafting. But as a ditch digger, you can be outstanding in a field tomorrow. Digging a ditch, just put on that old orange vest, grab a shovel, and suddenly you're a ditch digger. And guys, remember, the gals really dig ditch diggers.
Digging it, digging it. Why be in a rut when you can be in a ditch? Grab a shovel and be a ditch digger.
Or call Dunwoody at 374-5800. 374-5800.
Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, and a classic spot from Luke Sullivan. And we've got Luke on the show right now.
Hey, everybody.
Yes.
Hey, Luke, before the break, we were talking about risk-taking, and you commented that it would be difficult to go to a client and ask them to take a risk, but there would be a better way of maybe talking about just being different. I'm going to challenge you a little bit on that. I got to ask you, you don't think Mitsubishi, when Deutsch came to them and said, we're going to do a campaign that involves no speaking of the product, it's going to be music only, we're going to put some kids inside the car and they're going to dance, or the Aflac folks, we're going to help promote your product through the walking of a duck in various unusual scenes, et cetera, or even going as far back as the I Want My MTV campaign. You think these clients didn't realize they were taking a risk?
Oh, no, I understand exactly. I'm sure they thought they were taking a risk. It's just packaging in the word risk. When you say, listen, we got to do something risky, that's, you know, yes, ultimately what you're talking about involves some risk. I just prefer to position risk as saying, let's do something different.
Mm-hmm. Let's not use the R word, is what you're saying.
The R word, exactly. Because mm-hmm. the R word tends to be translated, I think, probably by the uninitiated, is let's do something wacky.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do something that has no reason for being. Let's go against the grain for the sole reason that we're going to zig when the other guy's zag.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about mediocre advertising out there. Who's responsible for that, the client or the agency?
Oh, come on now. That's an loaded question. It's very easy.
Well, Ray's loaded today, so we're
absolutely loaded. It's you know what? Every business, every industry has good, great, and bad. It's a bell curve all over the universe, if you ask me. And in our industry, there's going to be great stuff, a whole bunch of kind of mediocre stuff in the middle, and then some really bad stuff in the backside, bringing up the rear. The fact of the matter is, not all clients are experts in marketing, and not all agencies are experts in advertising. They can say that they are, but the fact of the matter is, greatness is difficult to achieve in any field. So all that big morass in the middle, I think that's humanity.
So, I think you're a politician there, Luke.
Actually, it's not a diplomatic answer. I believe that it's really hard to be great at something. How many great painters can you name? How many incredibly perfect restaurants can you name?
Well, let me rephrase the question. If an agency creates mediocre work and they know it's average, and they take it to their client, and their client relies on their agency to provide them with what they believe is to be their best effort, and the client agrees and approves the ad or campaign, who would be responsible for mediocre advertising getting to the consumer at that point?
It's a conspiracy of mediocrity there.
Mm-hmm.
You've got an agency that probably wants to keep the account, and a client that probably doesn't want to get any phone calls or letters, and together they can probably water down all their stuff and end up with, you know, advertising is powerful, and even a mediocre ad can increase sales.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy to get through the day and get in your car at night having ruffled no feathers and really stretched no boundaries and actually increased client sales. I think that is possible, but to really, I once heard this great line that said, good advertising builds sales, great advertising builds factories. In order for those quantum leaps, those, geez, where did this come from? I got to get that. You know, it sometimes involves something more than just sort of a nice committee meeting and something that's okay.
Certainly a media weight can make up for a mediocre ad or campaign, but yet I believe it was Ray Jack Trout about 4 months ago said when we were talking about the troubles of McDonald's, he said there's no excuse for a company with the war chest, the marketing war chest of a McDonald's to have eroding market share and poor quarterlies. So I guess that could be an argument where actually media weight does not necessarily make up for a poorly crafted campaign. Huh, Luke?
Yeah. You know what else I think is at play sometimes, especially in these bigger clients, is committees. Mm-hmm. I've been to many clients of meetings over my 25 years, and when you're walking to this room, you'll find that on a single person-by-person basis, all the people are very smart, very capable, and all really trying to help their brand sharpen its knife edge.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because of the way committees work, all these smart people can't get a smart thing done. And sometimes some of the best work is led by a visionary leader who just simply says, you guys, here's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is a risk, or this is different, and let's just do that. That typically leads to stronger, more noticeable, effective advertising when there's when it's a very focused group at work and not a committee.
I hate committees.
And then the CEO, the CEO of Starbucks and the CEO of Nike would be two examples of people that are not only great executives but understand the idea of cutting-edge marketing and advertising. One final thought on your idea about committees. I read many years ago, and it's always stuck with me, walk through the parks or museums throughout the world, and you will never see a statue that was created by a committee. Which is probably something to be said for the creative process, I suppose. I don't know.
Going to take a break here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth and our special guest, Luke Sullivan, talking to Luke this weekend out of Austin and author of the book, Hey Whipple, Squeeze This. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
You don't look good, Bill.
Well, I've been sick, Bob.
How sick, Bill?
Pretty sick, Bob.
Go to a doctor, Bill.
Don't want an expensive doctor bill, Bob.
Then go see Dr. Bob, Bill.
Dr. Bob, Bob?
No, just Dr. Bob, Bill.
Will there be a deductible bill, Bob?
No, his name is Dr. Bob, but you won't see a doctor bill, Bill.
How can you see this Dr. Bob without seeing a doctor bill, Bob?
Dr. Bob is part of HMO Plus, Bill.
What's the plus, Bob?
You can choose one of over 150 doctors, plus not see a deductible bill, Bill.
I feel better, Bob.
Thought you were sick, Bill.
I am, but now I don't have to see a doctor bill, Bob.
You know, you could also see their Dr. Tom, Bill.
Will Dr. Tom be like Dr. Bob and not give me a Dr. Bill, Bob?
You're making me sick, Bill.
Ask your employer about HMO Plus or call 466-5860. There are over 150 participating physicians in the Tidewater area. No claim forms and no deductible bills from the doctor. HMO Plus is an affiliate of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Virginia.
From the twisted mind of Luke Sullivan. No, that was a great spot.
Yeah, that was a good spot.
Yeah, Luke Sullivan here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. And we've got one more segment with Luke before we have to say
bye-bye. I think this spot's a good example of simplicity, yet has a compelling message there and is engaging to the listener.
Very engaging.
Several months ago, Luke, C.J. Frawley, advertising chief at GM, General Motors, for those that are initially challenged, gave a talk earlier this year where he called advertising holding companies soft and flabby. Hello, Ray. Soft and flabby, as well as many other things, including not very creative. I know GSD&M is owned by one of those large holding companies. Are ad agencies who are publicly owned today, Luke, paying too much attention to Wall Street, do you think?
I don't know how to answer that. I sit in front of a typewriter all day long, and I try to solve problems creatively. All the money stuff and the who owns who stuff doesn't interest me.
So it never goes into any consideration of the work that you do?
Oh, I'd like to think not. I'd like to think that my client's problems are standing right in front of me, what I work on. So, mm-hmm. You know, the fact of the matter is the guys would love to give you an insightful answer about that, but that stuff doesn't interest me.
Yeah, well, and we've asked that of the Donnie Deutsches and others of the world out there, and they've had certainly their take on that. Well, let's get some insight into Luke Sullivan as creative head at GSD&M. What's a typical week in the life and times of Luke Sullivan?
Well, you know, I once heard somebody describe the job description of a creative director as a garbage man. You take the trash out. if it were that easy, I guess all I'd be doing here is sitting here approving, I like that ad, I don't like that ad. The fact of the matter is, if you're really trying to move a client's brand up another level and make them more money, which is what this business is about, it's more than just approving, not approving stuff. You're literally looking at their business horizon on a daily basis and trying to figure out the competition's weaknesses and leveraging your strengths to make them more money.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's more than just a matter of doing ads. Sometimes right now I'm busy working on trying to create a television show for one of our clients, branded content. That'd be a great way to get our client's agenda out into the national conversation and not using typical paid media.
Can you say who that client is?
No, I prefer not to.
Yeah. It's okay. After you get off the air, we'll make somebody up.
Okay, great.
But yeah, you know, so how often, as creative, what's your title here, group creative head at GSD&M, does that mean is that the same version of a chief creative officer in an ad agency?
No, it's not. Thanks for asking. Chief creative officer is typically the top single creative head voice at an agency. This agency, the very big one, $1.2 billion here in Austin, Texas, large enough that we actually have about four agencies, mini agencies, set inside.
Mm-hmm.
Our boss, Roy Spence, says he likes to get big by thinking small, and so we try to do that by having four different groups that handle, it's almost like mini agencies within a large agency.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on top of one of those with my partner, David Crawford, and then there are three other pillars that hold this place up, run by other guys with the same title as me.
And particular accounts of the agency are assigned to each particular
right.
group?
Southwest Airlines is in one group over there, and our group's Legacy or Kohler or SBC. It keeps us all busy, but we look at it as little agencies.
So if your phone is not working and you do use SBC, call Luke at GSD&M.
Call Luke Sullivan directly.
He'll take all those calls. We only have about
a
minute
left. You can find your lost luggage in Southwest. That'd be fun.
We only have about a minute left, Luke, and I always like to end on an upbeat note regarding your book. If you could only impart one piece of wisdom that is in this nice and very well-written book, what would it be?
The last two words of the book are be humble. People get big heads in this business. I do not know why. They think that writing a commercial makes them somehow very smart. But if you remember, what we do is basically, if we were in the Middle Ages, we're the guys who carved the big wooden tooth that hangs over the dentist's
mm-hmm.
office.
Yep.
How could you brag about that? Hey,
yep.
Did you see my tooth? I did that.
And you and I talked off the air before the show, and if you don't start by creating an ad campaign with the idea in mind that people don't care about your client's product or service, maybe you're not starting from the right perspective, huh?
I think so. I mean, you've got to take products that our clients live and die by these sales, and the products are out there for a reason. They solve a problem or bring emotion, and you need to make it interesting and make people say, I want that.
Luke Sullivan, we are out of time for this portion of the interview. Thanks so much for being on the Advertising Show.
You guys, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Luke.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Oh, hello. Is this Midwestern Computer Wholesalers? Yes. Well, I'd like to buy as many of your products as I could. Money is no object. I have oodles. Tons and tons of money, actually. In fact, I'm standing on a brick-sized bundle of $1,000 bills right now. Yes, well, anyway, I'd like to give you all this money. What would it be convenient if I just ran by now and dropped off $1 million in cash? I'll just, swing by, drop it off, won't take...
U.S. West Communications would like to remind small business owners that no customer ever bought anything from a busy signal, and that maybe it's time you added that extra phone line to your business.
Well, would $2 million be of any bother? I realize it'll take up quite a bit of space. Good, $2 million it is. Well, nice doing business with you. Goodbye.
So if you own a small business, call U.S. West Communications and see how an extra phone line could improve your bottom line.
The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, and a final spot from Luke Sullivan, author of Hey Whipple, Squeeze This, and we enjoyed talking with Luke out of Austin today.
Mm-hmm.
That's so true, a busy signal. Oh, man. You know, how many times do good ad campaigns deliver consumers to a specific point, and the product is not ready to be marketed yet?
Right.
And consequently, it falls flat on its face.
And there's a good example of an entertaining spot that evokes the listener's ear, and the listener's going to engage with that spot, and most people in their mind are going, what in the world is that? And before you know it, you're listening to the sell message, and you get it.
So you can do that. Doesn't matter whether you're big market, small market, medium market, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You can do stuff like that.
Just demand of yourself and your agency. Great creative, and you'll get it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hey, by the way, real quickly, Julie with Hero Product Placement out of Los Angeles, we had her and her husband on the show a few weeks ago, and we are part of a process of product placement, We the Advertising Show. And just a quick update, Julie has requested from the Advertising Show coffee mugs that will have the word Advertising Show written on them to be placed in movies and TV sitcoms. Also is going to be getting an audio track of the various clips of the radio show here, and will be played in the background of either a full-length feature film when they need a radio playing in either a car situation or in the background, or on a TV program. And there will be other opportunities for the Advertising Show to get out there in the world of product placement. It's just our way of updating you on a little bit of an experiment that we're going to have here in the Advertising Show with the fine folks at Hero Product Placement out of Los Angeles.
And the website for them is what, HeroPP.com?
Yes, HeroPP.com. Okay. So if you want to learn more, it's a great website, by the way.
Good deal.
And we also have them placed on our website under a business partner and also under industry link. So AdvertisingShow.com will get you there as well.
This is good. Time for Andy Borowitz here on the Advertising Show.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for the Advertising Show. And now here's this week's feature from the Borowitz Report.
Internationally renowned magician David Blaine stunned the world this past week by announcing that for his next stunt, he would attempt to go 40 days without publicity. A spokesperson for the master illusionist confirmed that commencing November 1st, Mr. Blaine would go 44 days without generating headlines, appearing in TV specials, or being photographed in New York nightclubs with German supermodels. While some in the world of magic and illusion called Mr. Blaine's audacious new stunt his boldest ever, others doubted that he could pull it off. Dr. Randall Kendrick, an adjunct professor at the University of Minnesota who teaches a graduate course in the history of celebrity magicians, is among the doubters. It's important to remember that in addition to being a magician, Mr. Blaine is a celebrity. Dr. Kendrick says celebrities can go without a lot of things for 44 days. Carbs, for example. But publicity is not one of them. Dr. Kendrick points to the example of on-again, off-again lovebirds Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck, who canceled their wedding after complaining about the overwhelming crush of publicity, only to be photographed procuring a gun license together a few days later, making tabloid headlines around the world. By most estimates, J-Lo and Ben were able to go approximately 36 hours without publicity, Dr. Kendrick says. I'd be surprised if David Blaine holds out much longer than that. In other news, the state of Illinois announced today that it would start buying drugs from Canada, while the state of Ohio confirmed that it would start sleeping with Sweden.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from the Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to BorowitzReport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
Yeah, fake. Thanks, Andy. Yeah. On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, next week we've got Kenneth Roman, co-author, of How to Advertise.
Big-time agency guy. If you don't know Kenneth Roman, you don't know advertising.
You'll meet him next week,
hey,
right?
Yes, and he's a great guest and an icon in the industry. Just as a wrap-up to today's show, I want to read this. I wish I would have written it, but I didn't, so we'll give the credit to Thomas D. Murray.
Okay.
Advertising may be the only business in the world where the clients with the most money can make demands until they get the agency's worst product, while the small client, with little money to spend, must meekly accept the agency's best work. Interesting concept, isn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting idea to live now.
We'll hang that over the door at the Advertising Show. A little Maybe one in the lobby or
something.
Is it
straight
like
now? How about over here?
Yeah.
Here?
Exactly.
Now?
Exactly.
There.
The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Don't forget, you keep in touch with The Advertising Show. Please don't spam us, though. Okay?
Yeah, I'm still, you know.
We don't need any Viagra. Thanks.
But it smells
at theadvertisingshow.com. That's the place to go. This show is archived there. It will be very shortly, as soon as we're done with it, actually, on theadvertisingshow.com. And you can also send your questions, but please no spam. Next week, it's Kenneth Roman, co-author of How to Advertise. The Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production on the SSI Radio Network.